And welcome, everybody, to YouTube, where we are joining you now for overtime. Emmanuel over here. Kyle, did you make it okay?
Oh, indeed. I'm here. I'm all ready.
Right. All right. And let's see if Skype Land has worked. Mitch, I see you. I see the cat. Are you both there?
We're both here.
It's funny. The cat was sitting on the chair as if the cat was part of the broadcast. It was really incredible. Now, Greg, you've migrated from the phone over to Skype.
Indeed. I'm watching my ping time go down and down as the evening progresses here in Yukon, and we'll see if Skype works. So we'll see if it works out for us.
The reason that was necessary, because we want to be able to take phone calls, and if you're on the phone, obviously that's a bit of a challenge. But before we get started continue the conversation, I just wanted to play something for the benefit of YouTube. That election was stolen. It was. And let me tell you why. I'll tell you that as soon as I tell you why all vaccinations are bad. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You know, we can joke, right? We can, right? Can we? Let's find out. Let's see. Let's see what happens if we play this a few times. Boy, it still pisses me off that they did that, that they forced us to jump through hoops and waste our time because they don't understand sarcasm.
Well, now, hear me out. Would you be more upset if something really abhorrent was said and it wasn't flagged or recognized? Like, are you...
That I said?
Are you upset that it's overbearing, or would you be more upset if it was looser and, like, crazy stuff wasn't getting, you know, little love letters like that?
Look, if we had one of those conspiracy podcasts, right, and we were just spreading all kinds of misinformation and lies and things like that, I, you know, expect some kind of backlash for that, but that's not what we were doing.
We don't have a sarcasm algorithm, though.
We're literally talking about disagreeing. That was what the conversation was about. It's about, you know, how we disagree, and just as a joke, I disagreed a lot to show how crazy it can get. But we can handle it, Google. We don't need a paternalistic overlord to tell us how to behave. Now, if you find people that are actively out to spread lies, and that is what they do, yeah, take action against those people. But let us have our conversations. And like I said on the radio show, if somebody calls us and has a different view, and, you know, a view that we might have a problem with, I don't want you to cut it off. Let us deal with it. Let us have the conversation. Work on your network.
Look, man, I'm taking it as a compliment that our natural language is crazy natural.
Uh-huh.
It's just you can't keep up with it.
No, you can't. Greg, go ahead.
Well, I know there's different theories, but I'm absolutely of the opinion that this is simply pattern matching. And there's no way and this is what we saw with Mr. Robot at the Hope Conference. There's really no way of accounting for sarcasm when you're simply looking for strings in your speech-to-text algorithm along the lines of the election is stolen or Trump
he said,
won.
He said it. Now you're going to flag the whole thing. Yep.
Jehovah.
I heard that too. Oh, my God. Yeah. So, okay. So if you can't deal with sarcasm, then that's not how to monitor speech, you know?
Well, no. I mean, the whole nuance, which protects the First Amendment and balances fair use. I mean, in the U.S., there's a huge law about this, and it's absolutely inconsistent with the idea of pattern matching. I mean, it's all about the nuance and all about the intentions behind the words.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, you know, I know in Germany things are a little bit different as far as speech. Is there anything you can point to that would stand out for us here in America?
Yeah, well, it is really interesting. When I first started visiting Berlin for Chaos Congress in 2006, I was really surprised to find out that Germany does not have freedom of speech. And there's some pretty good reasons for that too that are interesting, and there's no like real right and wrong. Certainly people's rights are limited by other rights and they come into conflict. Here there were a bunch of people a few decades ago that were espousing lies and hatred, and it became a populist kind of a thing, kind of like we're experiencing somewhat recently in our dear land. And that took over, and they don't want to have a repeat of that. So how do you stop that? What's an effective way to stop that while still giving people enough rights to live lives that they find way worth living? And there's no really good answer for all of that. And you know, and similarly, what we're experiencing now with so-called social media, there's billions of accounts on there, many of them bots, but many of them actual human beings with very different points of view. And some people are just going out to try to get as popular as possible and playing off this populism thing. How can these companies possibly limit that without impinging on the rights of others accidentally or purposefully? You know, and here we have someone who I love to hate, Elon Musk, claiming that he's going to take Twitter and make it a free speech haven. I hate to see what that's going to come to. And our actual friend Aesthetics wants to see Twitter go out of business as a result of all of that, and that might actually happen.
Wow. Yeah, we're witnessing a lot of things here. Definitely, and somehow we keep getting dragged into it.
Yeah, well as hackers, as you point out, we're always pushing limits, and so it makes sense that we're going to be the people who sort of have to pay or deal with some consequences earlier than others.
That election was stolen. It was. Oh, that's going to be our new theme. It really is. We're going to keep saying that over and over again. What else can I say? Vaccinations are bad. Everything is evil. The government is not your friend. Don't push us. We'll say all the things you don't want us to say if you overdo it.
I think especially...
Yeah, fascinating.
Go ahead, Greg.
That hate speech is going to be more protected than like a legitimate, even intellectual debate over something like vaccination, for example. Mm-hmm. So, the thing related to what Mitch was saying is we're in an attention economy. I mean, and you could trace all this back well beyond someone like Hitler in Germany. But nowadays, people get news coverage, they get TikTok coverage, you know, they get retweeted, whatever it is, when they say something that's over the top and absurd and maybe false. And then, you know, maybe eventually they end up in front of a court or something, and then they can't say that anymore. And we see this all the time in the U.S. Midterm elections, where the absurd over-the-top statement gets you the headlines, and the debate almost never even gets a chance to occur. And I don't know what to do about what I was saying before, the role of automated, you know, censorship basically, you know, but automated pattern matching. I think maybe there's a role for that, but it doesn't do anything about the extreme attention getting that, you know, that bypasses all that stuff and uses subtlety and maybe more subtle sarcasm than what we're hearing here.
Yeah, and also it makes martyrs of the wrong people, and that's something really to be concerned with. So, there's pointers. There's all kinds of advice we can offer. We've been dealing with this kind of crap for a long time with, you know, BBSs and IRC and all that. So maybe Google's somewhat new to the game. But there's ways of controlling the quality of content and ways not to do that. And I think we're seeing some demonstrations. And, you know, just on the subject, you're talking about the hate speech. Hate speech is not something we engage with. I mean, somebody called up and had all kinds of hate speech to share, no, we wouldn't continue that conversation, absolutely not. But if somebody is woefully misled on a topic, on something going on in the news, we have every right to have that conversation, and we resent greatly being told that we can't talk about that. So that's the line for us. We have a call? We didn't get out the phone number yet, so you know it's got to be Rebel, right? It's probably Rebel. 802-321-4225, but right now the line's occupied, so let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Well, it's not Rebel, but it's Phil from Virginia.
It's Phil from Virginia. Okay, well, you're the new Rebel, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while. A lot's happened. We sucker punched an asteroid.
That's true.
We, I think it's just amazing that we were able to manipulate stellar objects now. Did you hear about the scientists that had human brain cells in a petri dish playing Pong?
I did not hear that. Kyle, you heard about this?
Yes.
What? Tell us what's go ahead, Carly, you tell us.
Well, okay. They were experimenting with brain cells, and they cultivated some brain cells into a petri dish and taught it to play Pong.
Okay, I'm both amazed and freaked out and scared.
Yes, because, okay, is that a human being now, right? Because it's human brain cells, right?
Well, the ability to play Pong, is that how you measure what's human and what's not?
I don't know. It's cells in a petri dish. What is human now?
I'm pretty sure Mitch's cat can play Pong, so that doesn't make it human.
Well, you know, I don't know. You got these anti-abortion people. What would they think about it?
Okay, let's confuse them. That's a good idea.
Only if you lose the game.
But, you know, is that biological AI, or would that be definition of biological AI?
I just want to get into the mind of this guy. It's like, you know what, I'm going to go with a petri dish, and this was the goal. Was this the goal, or was it an accident?
No, this is. I think it was just something they were playing around with. But can you imagine your cell phone having a human neural network? What if it develops schizophrenia?
I wish my cell phone had Pong, now that I think about it.
That is interesting that if you're using biological-based processors, and if they have, like, a mental breakdown, you have true, like, panic in your system because it's having a rough day or something.
Wow.
If you were to put this thing, like, make a space probe with it, right? Have some way for it to have like a nutrient bath or something like that to keep alive in.
Uh huh.
What's to keep the space probe from going friggin' nuts?
That's something to worry about.
So lonely.
Mitch, you had something. Go ahead. Mitch?
Let me, there we go. It took a while for Skype to unmute me. I just looked up and there's an NPR story. Saying that about 800,000 cells linked to a computer gradually learned to sense the position of the Pong game's electronic ball and control a virtual paddle.
Wow.
And that's in the journal Neuron.
Well,
so evidently this actually happened, and it was intentional to use this actual neurons as the neural network to learn to play this simple game.
And what happens when they learn how to play Grand Theft Auto?
I'm going to have them send them in robots, you know. Forget Terminator, it's going to be worse.
Greg, go ahead.
Have robots going around.
Yeah, I think it's...
Go ahead, Greg.
Maybe not too surprising about this is, and it's that you barely even need a neural network, is this is, you know, basically operant and appetitive conditioning. You know, this is the type of thing that bacteria can learn, and you know, nematodes, which only have a few hundred neurons and things like this. So you know, if you think of Pong in terms of going towards reward and away from punishment, or you know, a combination of both, I'd say it's not really too surprising. You can this is something that is a really very, very basic game. Grand Theft Auto would be indeed a little more interesting, or you know, even chess or checkers or something like that.
Self-driving cars with human neurons. There's Christine right there, right?
Well, let's check in 20 years. I'm sure we'll be further along. Go ahead, Greg.
I do have an idea, which is maybe we put this petri dish full of neurons in charge of censorship on YouTube. Maybe that's part of the answer. We'll look for those strings.
Yeah.
Maybe it's already in
that
charge.
Could be why it happened. Absolutely. Well, Carla, right. Anything else going on down there in Virginia?
Let's see. Well, I'm working on the parade stuff. I got like the 501st. You ever heard of the 501st Stormtroopers?
I don't think
like
so.
A chick. their charity that like just the like Stormtroopers for the Halloween thing. They might show up. I got like a guy called stuff for West Virginia Batman. He's got like an actual Batmobile, like the 89 Batmobile.
Wow. And this is all for a Halloween.
Yeah, I got my Johnny. Yeah.
This is a Halloween parade you're organizing?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Year, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I got my astronomy club. I got a room for it. The first meeting's like on November 19th. I am getting... have you heard of Skype a Scientist?
No.
Okay. Well, it's where you can, like, use Skype to talk to scientists and they'll, like, do little lectures or whatever with you or do Q&As. So I'm trying to get a couple of astronomers for that.
To link into your club?
Yeah.
Great. That's a good idea.
Wow. And you've done all this since we talked to you last, organizing astronomy club and parades?
Well, yeah, I'm waiting on to hear from the animal shelter, and I got to call the Humane Society here to see about getting a tax code to give to PetSmart to see if they will sponsor the pet parade thing.
Didn't this all start with you getting them to cut a branch?
Yeah.
Amazing. This is inspirational.
I just showed up at the town meeting one night,
uh-huh.
And you know, just did my thing, and it turns out our town is so broke that they're trying to use rent off an old bar to try to pay for a fire truck. So I'm just going to like slide in. Well, why can't we just do a tax? You know, make more sense, but it's Virginia.
Well, but, it sounds like they're listening to you, which is awesome.
Yeah. I got the permits. I got to fill out the permits because I don't know how well this is going to go, and I've still got a year off for it. Like, I'm planning for June to be the pet parade thing and Halloween, around Halloween for the Halloween, like a week before Halloween. Even with so much as email Elvira. Because I want her to, like, judge the Elvira lookalike contest.
Okay.
But, yeah, man, I'm just trying to keep from going crazy in my little apartment. But also, have you been watching the Dale Brooks case?
The which case?
Dale Brooks.
No, I don't think so.
The guy ran into the parade.
Okay. I didn't know the name. I didn't really want to know the name, but...
Yeah.
Well, I heard about it, yes.
He is a sovereign citizen, which means, just like those ranchers out west a while back, that the government can't tell us what to do because we declare ourselves independent from the government, blah, blah, blah. So he's there ranting and raving and not making himself look any good. But yesterday, a person went on to Reddit claiming to be a juror from the trial, and almost led to a mistrial. They had an investigation and so forth, and later on it turned out to be a prank. But, you know, I was watching one of your YouTube lawyers talk about it, and they're like, well, you know, that's why we can't have nice things, because when you do things publicly, like it's when you, like, publicly live stream, like, trials, you're going to get people like this, and it can lead to a mistrial. I guess. Well, what do you think about that? I mean...
Well, it's not going to be a mistrial if the person's just lying and isn't an actual juror. You know, people
do that all the time. If they were to, you know... Well, say the judge, like, say, okay, well, you know, we can't risk this. And I know the juror said he didn't do it, but still, you know, we're going to have to get a new jury, and mistrial got to start over, right?
Well, that'd be a pretty dim-witted judge if they had no evidence and was simply relying on somebody posting to Reddit saying they were on a jury. You need actual evidence.
Still, it just shows how something we do, how we can make a little just a little joke. Like you were talking about earlier, like being sarcastic and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We can make a little joke, and all of a sudden they can be blown up out of proportion into something that wasn't meant to be.
If it's a juror making a joke, that is a big deal. If it's somebody who's not related to the case in any way, then it's completely irrelevant.
Yeah. I don't know if the person could be charged with anything who did it.
Well, it depends. You know, if they're just lying on Reddit, I don't think that's a crime. If it is a juror, in fact, messing up the whole case, then there's probably some kind of penalty for that.
Yeah.
But from what you told me, I assume it's not a juror, so.
I didn't get to talk to you about the Alex Jones thing. So what's your take on that?
About what now?
Alex Jones and the almost $1 billion he's going to pay out.
The InfoWars settlement.
Oh, Alex Jones. Oh boy. Here's my thought on that. It's a hefty penalty, but he's a pretty hefty idiot. and he caused so much pain, so much anguish, tortured people who were already victims. And I don't expect him to cough up $1 billion, but I also don't expect him to ever get rich or to benefit in any way from any of this. He should basically be living out his days now, paying off those people that he basically tortured for no reason. I mean, why would someone do something like that? It's so disgusting, you know. And we talk about sending messages to people for the crimes they commit. Well, where's the message here? You know, that you can spread a whole lot of crap that's completely false, and make people who are already suffering suffer even more. And become a celebrity, become more of a celebrity, benefit, sell T-shirts? No. If you do something like that, you're held accountable, all right? And we have to treat each other better than this.
Yeah. I felt very strongly about this, like people trading in what the hacking community is all about, and then all of a sudden representing it, profiting and misrepresenting it, and making it out to be something for their aims instead of something that is widely kind of self-directed and understood as other people understand it.
That's just greed and simple theft. And this is beyond that. This is hurting innocent people.
And making money. I mean, that was the big thing, is he was trading in it. So, you can't get more.
This is like Stephen Miller evil. You can't get more evil than this. You really can't.
Yeah.
So, I applaud the verdict, I applaud the penalty, and I just hope that something happens where, you know, he feels the pain.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I'm hoping to see the victims, like, actually take over the InfoWars studio.
I hope to see the InfoWars studio be turned into something completely different, you know, where it doesn't pollute any airwaves or anything anymore. I mean, this guy, he was mocking the people even after this was announced, saying they're not going to get a penny. Do they think they're going to get any money? He doesn't get it. He needs to get it. There is no question about that. Greg, you had something to say about this?
The specific thing, you know, Alex had been deplatformed already and deplatformed again, and we can just hope that he keeps getting deplatformed more and more, that he has no way of getting his wacky message out. And that's, there's some justice in that, in addition to, restitution, but also being unable to continue. And unfortunately, he didn't express a lot of regret. And it sounds like he's going to be trying, to keep on. And I thought that was, there's a broader, topic there. I just saw a New York Times, newsletter about the different platforms, you know, in the context of Musk buying Twitter, but also saying that all these replacement platforms like Parlay, they had something like 40,000 users per day versus Facebook, which still has something like, you know, 1.5 billion users per day. So even these alternative platforms are having a lot of difficulty thriving and surviving, which to me is probably okay. I mean, I like the idea of having small micro platforms. You know, we know all about that in the hacker community, and there's something to be said for that. On the other hand, if the platform exists just like Alex Jones, just to abuse, just to profit from the pain of others, then, you know, basically, you know, fuck them.
Yeah.
Because we're on YouTube and we can say that.
You can say that. Go ahead, Mitch, and then Kyle.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if how many people are aware of this. There's a movie that came out like about 1980, Richard Linklater's first movie called Slacker. And it's an interesting film. If you've never seen it, I recommend checking it out. There's not much of a plot. It starts off at dawn and then goes from character to character to character and then back at dawn. And the movie starts and ends with this total wacko in a van with a huge speaker on the top with a PA. And he's saying all sorts of crap that in 1980, he was, and this is actually a real character who existed in Austin, Texas, where the movie was made, and Art Linklater, the filmmaker, lived. And he was kind of like laughed at, and he seemed harmless enough. He was spouting all sorts of conspiracy weirdness, and that was Alex Jones.
Oh, wow.
And that was his platform back then, was a microphone with an amplifier and a speaker on a van. He just drove it around all day in Austin, Texas. And back then, that was harmless. People could laugh at him, and he was kind of fun in a weird way. And he thrived on that kind of attention. Fast forward a few decades to so-called social media, and that same message repeated finds that people have likes, and this same guy finds that he can magnify those kind of messages and get more and more extreme and more absurd, really, and get more and more attention. And this is, you know, part of the problem with these so-called social network platforms. You know, as Greg said, there's billions of people there. And there's going to be a lot of different people using it for all sorts of different motivations. I don't think there's any way to actually stop it being used just to get attention for attention's sake and people profiting from that. There's lots of attempts, and I'm glad people are trying, but, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, you can copy it. It's imitatable. It lives on because there are recordings of it. And the sites, the larger ones that this that we found propagated this so well, because that's how they were designed and are run. And then as far as we can presume, we don't have a lot of insight, although there's been a lot of asking and a lot of questions around that. But basically, these smaller sites like Parler and other ones, like as Greg was referencing, are themselves isolated. They don't interoperate as well. As some of them, I don't know if they're based on Discord or any of the federated stuff. There's a lot of cloning of systems and so forth. But when you have a much larger system that casts that out over a broad pool of people who are essentially all connected on this one service, that is distinct from smaller services that are kind of isolated because they can maybe share links and so forth depending on the type of service, but they are basically fragmented but still there. So the effect is different. Maybe the algorithms, the base of whatever platform it is doesn't operate essentially exactly the same way. But they're not going away, and when they are persisting in isolation, we need insight about it. I think people need to know what is being said there, whether it's policed or not. But we also need to be aware of, like, the ability of them to connect and you know, what kinds of shape it's changing forms in and moving around in constantly. Because it seems to be an ideology and a behavior that hasn't been resolved socially.
Yeah, the sad thing is that it works. It makes people money, and that's mm-hmm. how you get the Charlie Cooks and the Prager University and Fox News and you know, like Ben Shapiro. You get all those guys, and it's because it works. It makes them money.
And you know, the thing is, it makes them money, makes them famous. But for some reason, that's not enough. They have to keep going for the jugular. They have to make people really hurt and be just complete jerks. And we have to react. Like, we have to react when people do this.
It's like the Republican Party now has like this hit list of what they want to do to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like now they're trying to block the student loan thing. Which I don't understand. Why would you want to block a debtor from, like, not collecting on their debt? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's no...
Yeah.
Their claim, the states that have, like, filed the injunction to halt it or stay it, their claim is that it's going to take tax money away from the states. But the Republicans are anti-tax, right? So...
Yeah, I guess you can trip them up on their own logic there. I just wonder how somebody in a state where your state is fighting to make sure that you don't get loan forgiveness, how does that make you feel? You know, will you do everything in your power to make sure those people got reelected? I hope so.
I know the people who support these guys are all in on it. They're all for it. And you try to talk to them out and they get mad and just, like, mm-hmm. hang up on you or whatever.
Yeah, that's
true. But it's like the. I think it's just reality hitting them, and they don't want to face it. Like, wait a minute, what? Wait a minute, I could have an electric car now, but I would rather keep paying $5 a gallon for gas and.
Yeah, it's
what?
It's no,
I'd rather pay for gas.
Hey, listen, we're going to open up the phones to some more people. It's great hearing from you, though.
Sorry.
No apology. Yeah. You've done some amazing things down there, and I hope to hear more.
Well, I hope to pull it off. I mean, it's a lot of hard work.
Uh-huh. But it feels good, doesn't it? It feels good when you actually get a response.
Yeah, I got real happy about the Batman thing, because I was like, man, that's going to be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It's only the beginning.
He apparently charges by how far he has to drive or whatever, so hopefully he can figure that out. But, you know, I also emailed a charity group that's like Ghostbusters. They all play Ghostbusters, they go around and stuff.
Yeah, you'll find all kinds of characters, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, it's good talking to you guys again.
Likewise.
Have a good and I'll catch you later.
All right, take care.
Later on.
Wow. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. Great hearing from our callers. We haven't talked to in so long. It's been a while. Go ahead, Greg.
Can I make it? A related pitch for a podcast. So
yes.
You mentioned on the BAI show the power of the airwaves and how wonderful it is to have the radio station. And we know that mass media is still out there, TV and radio. There's a fantastic podcast called The Flamethrowers. It's a CBC podcast, and it includes the story that we just heard about Alex Jones. And it focuses a lot on the career of Rush Limbaugh and how he essentially was a kingmaker to the tune of really being instrumental in getting Donald Trump in the White House. But it also goes all the way back to some religious people and a lot of other things in the 1930s and afterwards. So the Flamethrowers CBC podcast about the power of the radio and basically how this stuff sells. And that's all you need to know about why they keep doing it. Mm-hmm. It's because they can keep making. Being extreme and having extreme viewpoints, regardless of truth or consequences.
Can I just say, CBC does some of the best radio I have ever heard. We have a channel. We have the Sirius XM crap. Most of it is utter garbage, but the CBC Radio 1 is just so incredible. Last night I heard a segment on their daily show, As It Happens. They were talking about 3.5-inch floppy drives and how there are places that still use them. And just talking to people about this, it's just so interesting. I've stayed in my car much longer than I need to on many occasions because something was on the radio that I had to hear the end of. So that's the measure of good radio, I think. And they really do it right. They really do. We have another call?
Yes, and I believe this might be from that part of the world.
That part of the world. Canada.
Indeed.
Are you from Canada, caller?
Greetings. Kirby from Etobicoke calling.
Wow, you must be some kind of soothsayer, Kyle. How did you know that this caller was coming? So now we have two people connected to us right now north of the border.
Well represented, yeah.
And three people out of the country, and we're the minority now, Kyle. We're the only ones in the United States.
Safely, yeah.
Wow. So, Kirby, how you been?
I'm doing great. Greetings, Mitch. Kyle, Emmanuel, and Greg.
Yeah, we've all met in person now, so that's cool.
That is cool.
So what's new up there in Ontario?
Lots has happened. Lots has happened.
Tell us.
Last 2 days ago, we had a municipal election, and for the first time in, I don't know, like 23 years or something, there is no Ford in Toronto.
Wait, you got rid of Ford?
We didn't get rid of them. They all got jobs in the province.
No, but I mean, he's no longer your whatever it was that he was?
No, he's still that, but we had a municipal election, and it's the first time when he hasn't had that Etobicoke North seat that him and his family name have run for like 23 years, because he got his nephew a job, in the state level, so to speak.
I see. Okay, well, that's a good thing.
And
that's a victory.
It is a victory, and get this, okay, so Etobicoke Central, we were the only place in Toronto that defeated the incumbent by 2,000 votes. We got rid of that bum, and we got somebody new, and 2,000 votes. So everybody that voted really thinks that they made a difference.
Yeah, and I hope people in this country realize that, too. They realize how much their vote matters, and if you're listening to the sound of my voice, make sure you vote this year, because, boy, it's important. If you've been watching anything
on
television.
That's why I mentioned it.
Listen to Kirby here.
The thing was, everybody was so not interested that it was up to the people that were interested, and that isn't, like, when you poll somebody, you're supposed to be polling, like, what people are going to vote, because those people are going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not like that's the opinion of the people if they decide to vote.
Correct. Yeah.
Kind of thing. So I think that really, when it comes down to it, I think that's the bottom line these days, is getting participation. It's not so much what the percentages are. It's how can you get people out to vote.
And it also has to be relatively painless to vote in the first place, whether you're voting absentee, whether you're voting early, whether you're voting locally or by mail. It has to be something. Every state is different. Every province is different. You have to explain it. You have to make sure people are aware. And you got to follow up and remind people, remind people to get out there and exercise their civic duty. Because if you don't, someone else will do it for you, and you probably won't like the results.
But, like, this is literally in my part of Toronto. A 1,000 households, changed the tide.
That's incredible.
And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, this just happened when? Yesterday?
2 days ago was the election, and it was quite a surprise. Like, I mean, we hoped for the best, but we didn't expect the outcome to be. It was close, but the whole night, like, we kind of had a lead, so it was a fun night.
Boy, I want to be able to say that. In 2 weeks, I want to be able to say that. Boy, we were hopeful for the outcome, but we didn't expect it to be this good. I want to say that at least once.
Well, you know what? People just have to care.
Yeah, take an
really
interest.
All it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Totally,
yeah.
Totally.
Well, I know people care. It's just I think people are convinced that they don't matter. And that really has to be changed. You have people out there telling you, don't even bother. It's not going to make a difference. Or in some cases, even being threatening to them, saying stay away from the polls or making up rules that don't pertain to them. It's, it's something they have to get past. Greg, you had something.
Well, people who don't vote are absolutely a major problem. There's also reasons, though, why people don't vote. It's often not that convenient. It's on a work day. There's issues. We know all about gerrymandering. We know all about voter suppression and polling places not being open and long lines and all this sort of thing. So unfortunately, there are real barriers to voting, but apathy doesn't need to be a barrier. Like, if you care, if you have an opinion, then why not make the effort to go out and have your voice heard, because it can make a difference.
And it's guaranteed to be easier than you think it is. If you think there are barriers, just go to your state election website and look up your particular situation. If you're away at school, if you're bedridden, you want to vote early, where your local polling place is, all sorts of things like that. Go ahead, Mitch, then Greg.
Yeah, and even for us refugees and immigrants living in other countries, we can vote by mail, and we can also vote by going to consulates. And
oh, really? I didn't know this. How do you vote?
I do it by mail.
Okay. So they mail you in Germany?
I have a friend. I kept my address with a friend in the U.S., so my voting goes there.
Okay.
Now that I'm a resident of Germany, I probably should just stop doing that, and then I can vote at the consulate.
Interesting. I didn't know you could do that. Wow. Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, interesting. For me, it's a somewhat of a different experience. So Mitch is, I think, California residency, right? And for me, it's Alaska. So as an Alaska, so here's the thing. Once you are a U.S. citizen, whether you're born there, become naturalized, or something else, you must pay taxes. You must file with the IRS every year on all income worldwide, legal or illegal. And because there once was a complaint about taxation without representation, as I recall from some history books, you do get to vote, even if you're not in the U.S. Now, you don't necessarily get to vote for, like, school board and local level elections. I think that depends probably on the local board and whatnot. But I have been able to vote in the presidential elections for the Senate and the House seats. I even get to vote for judges back where my residency was. And if at some point I move back to the U.S. and take up residency somewhere else, then that would be where I vote. But it does, the implementation of voting does vary state by state, as we know. I mean, that was like a really big deal in the 2020 election, and probably will be a big deal again in 2 weeks, how different states do different voting. In my case, Mitch, I have to file paperwork every year to say that I'm an absentee this year. In other words, that I'm going to be either out of the country on election day or one of the election days, or that I'm just permanently out of the country. But every year I have to renew this. And then they email me a ballot package. And if I wanted to, I could get it by postal mail. But they email me a ballot package, and then I return it by either fax or postal mail, and it has to be postmarked in time. And by the way, Alaska is doing not instant runoff voting. They don't call it that. They call it ranked choice voting. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me what the difference is between the two. But they're doing a variation on winner-take-all as of last year.
Yeah, Sarah Palin doesn't like that. It confuses her. Now, Kyle, you have, I think, the best system, because the state of Washington finds you wherever you are and mails you like six times a year.
Don't exaggerate, please.
But you're always voting. There's always some kind of an election.
Stop. Oh, my gosh.
It's true.
No, it works the way it should.
It does.
I'm curious if what technology there is to, are there apps in various states to help people find polling places or to register or sign up or at least get reminders about deadlines? Because for some of these processes, you have to arrange in advance, or you have to maintain correspondence, make sure you're updated. Wherever you are, but for people that travel for a living, that are mobile and moving around, there are a lot of accommodations, and I encourage people just to find a way that works for them, like have a friend or trusted colleague help you out, sort it out the way you can. So in my instance, I've been absentee. My whole state is absentee and has been. They switched over, so there's no polling place to go to. Everyone votes by mail. Mm-hmm. And so to that end, I'm able to I get a packet, and then I keep up with some of the places that do some of the reviews of the candidates, so to speak.
You can say who you look at, because it's really awesome. I think people should.
Well, I'm a big supporter of The Stranger in Seattle, and mm-hmm. they do the SECB, the Election Control Board.
Even if you
board.
Don't live there, it's worth reading just for the commentary.
Well, it's hilarious. But beyond that, King County elections and other counties in Washington, they distribute a pamphlet. Mm-hmm. So essentially, you'll get a pamphlet from the county, and there are statements from each candidate. They write personal statements, and they talk about their platform. So you use that as a guide. And then newspaper endorsements or publications, like I just mentioned, they put out reviews. They actually go and talk to people. I encourage you, find a place you trust and get some of the opinions. Find out what was said in some of those discussions. And that can help you as you're going through and filling in your bubbles, as it were. But do it. It doesn't take long, and if you have help, if you have the guides or stuff to go through, it really does not end up being a huge process. I was going to mention that one of the things I voted on was whether there should be ranked choice ballots.
That was
it was put to the people,
wow,
so to speak, and I was into it.
Okay.
I won't say how I voted, but
so I think the three of you, Kyle, citizen of Washington and New York, Mitch, citizen of California and Germany, and Greg, citizen of Alaska and Yukon, you all demonstrate how easy it is to actually vote in those situations. And of course, it's easy when you're not in a different place. When your polling place is in your community. So there really are very few excuses that I can think of that should prevent somebody from voting. You have all kinds of early voting possibilities. You have absentee voting. Every state is different. All the deadlines are different, but the opportunity is certainly there. Kirby, anything else from you?
Manuel, may I?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think for me, there was a very low voter turnout in the provincial election and the municipal election.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody I talked to that, I guess, didn't vote said, oh, I ain't voting. Nothing ever changes.
Well, you know, you're in Canada, and things are a bit more sane in Canada. You don't have, the women's right to choose. You just had the prime minister within the last week just basically comment that, oh, by the way, it's illegal to sell or buy or transfer handguns. So there. Just like that, I so envy the way people live up there.
Well, I mean, there is a lot more intricacies to that than meets the eye, but I will accept that as that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not gonna hurt anybody. And if anybody has a problem with it, they can, raise their concern and say they have to have a gun for this reason or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they can have it.
I'm amazed. I think our shock and really what stands out about that is just it's so far so quickly and no one's excited about it. Here it's like you bring it up about having any kind of incremental study or second look at a way we do one aspect of one type of one part of one type of weapon. It's like off limits. It's like it's changing. It's not the same. I don't think it's quite as excitable now, because as polarized as people want to make the issue, it's an issue that spans political party. It's not as black and white. And really, with all of the kinds of repeated attacks and tumult in American society, it's past time to work on it, as hard as it is for us. But it's astonishing to see a place like Canada just move so quickly.
Well, there are people who are upset about it, but mostly they're in sparsely populated states, kind of like similar in the United States, except in our particular case, when people are upset in sparsely populated states, somehow they become the dominant voices. Somehow they're the ones that we have to follow, and you wind up with situations, where Texas, not exactly a sparsely populated state, but this is the craziness of it, mass shootings galore, and their response is to make it so you don't even have to have a license to have a gun now. That's the reality that we're living in. So, when Canada does something, it's always a breath of fresh air.
I contend it's the excited folks that make that sound and seem more like a more of a reaction than it really mm-hmm. is to most people in this country. They're just very loud and passionate about it. Go ahead, Kirby.
Well, I was just going to say that up here people find other weapons to assault each other with. So
of course, there's always going to be another weapon. It's not going to stop violence. There's going to be violence, absolutely, but you don't have to make it so damn easy,
Or your political opponents.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Kirby, what?
Oh, it's just that it's, so damn easy. So, not only can you kill somebody or shoot somebody or maim somebody, anybody that just kind of finds it can. It's it's one of the things that is just such a game changer in the hands of almost anybody.
Well, the mass
right.
shooting
it's
that happened
beyond
the mass shooting at a school in St. Louis, which was a
yeah.
couple of days ago.
Yeah.
That particular case, the person who did this was suspected of having mental issues. There was a gun in the house. They called the cops to get the gun out of the house. The gun was taken out of the house, given to somebody who was a relative, and the guy went and got the gun from the relative. These things don't work. You know, guns
yeah.
are the problem.
Yeah.
They are the issue, and there's too damn many of them, and they're too easy to get your hands on. And in this particular case, I don't even know if a law was broken. I don't think there was. This is how the system is designed to operate, and it's just... It's so ridiculously stupid, and we don't seem to ever learn. So congrats on learning up there.
Canadian fun fact?
Yeah.
I went to school with the federal minister that declared the guns are banned.
Okay, that's something.
Yeah, no, it's just, I went to grade school with the guy, and now he's the federal minister of public safety. So
I went to school with Kevin James. Well, not at the same time.
Really?
Yeah, well, he lived in my neighborhood. Yeah, I didn't know that until a long time afterwards, but yeah. I mean, why would I know it then? Because he wasn't famous then.
Well, you went.
Yeah. Go ahead, Greg, and then we're going to move on to another call.
Yeah, just very briefly, the role of money in politics in Canada is much less than the role of money in politics in the U.S., and that I'd say that's probably the single biggest cause of some of these differences. And also, I went to school with Anthony Scaramucci.
Okay, all right. So, Mitch, who did you go to school with?
Fred.
Fred? Just Fred?
Yeah.
Okay.
First names only.
Uh-huh. Kyle, anybody you want to name? No?
I went to school with some cool people.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
They're all really cool. I had a fascinating academic career, but they're not like... people I would drop, you know, that anyone would know necessarily that I could think of, and, you know.
Maybe
so
you need to check in. Maybe
so
they've
forth.
Gone on to great things.
I'm afraid to for about half of them.
Some of them may have gone on to do horrible things.
Oh, they've gone on, I'm sure. I'm sure a lot of them have.
Uh-huh.
Good on them. I'm
well,
here doing
be,
this.
Let's be frank here. Kyle is the most famous person ever to come out of his school. It's just the way it is.
I didn't say that. I'm not. I'm just saying I'm here doing this, and I'm just as happy to be, you know, around still.
Think about it. Somebody went to school with Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, so there's that.
Yeah.
I wonder if you... Yeah, some names you just you're like yeah I don't want to talk about this.
I don't know how we got into this. How did we get into this particular subject? Well, Kirby, great hearing from you, and hopefully we'll hear from you again next time we're on the air, whenever that is.
Okay, quick shout out.
Go ahead.
Audrey, she's been doing great with her math and science and French, and keep up the good work.
Awesome! Congrats, Audrey. All right. We'll talk to you again soon.
And take care, everybody. I hope you have a good time.
All right. Be well. You know, next time we're on the air, it might be after election. Was that the delay that you had, Greg? You said bye, Kirby, about 10 seconds after he left.
Leave his delay.
I'm telling you, watching the ping is just getting longer and longer.
Okay, we got to do an experiment. But next time we're on the air, it might be after Election Day. So this might be the last time we sound so chipper.
Give that phone number out again.
Oh, wait, I want to see how long Greg's delay is. So, Greg, I'm going to count down from three, and I want you to say one the same time you think I'm going to say one. How does that sound? Okay, here we go. Three, two, one.
One.
Wow, that is a delay. That is a delay.
1 second.
Huh. How about you, Mitch? Okay, let's try. Ready? All right. Three, two, one. Much better in Germany.
Yeah,
all right. Kyle, how about you?
What?
You're in the same room, but there's still a delay. all right. So, shall we take this phone call?
Yeah, what?
Are you smoking?
No.
No, there's no smoking in the studio.
No, I'm engineering.
Been over this.
No, I tried to pick up this call, and I think I got it this time. There was another call. This is the second time I've tried.
But they'll pick up two calls at once.
Actually, this may not be them.
Who's
no, this
them?
Might be them. Yeah, try this.
I'm going to try this. All right. good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Good evening, guys. gang. This is Tim in Connecticut.
Tim in Connecticut. How you been?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Hey, I was just to get in on the voting thing. I think Australia has the right idea with mandatory voting.
Oh, yeah.
They say that they consistently get between 90 and 95% of people of a turnout because they issue fines if you don't vote.
You know, who would argue against that? You know, what's your reason for arguing against that? Because you can always vote for none of the above. You can always say that. You can voice that opinion if that's what you believe. But just not participating at all, not having any voice, who would be in favor of that?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't see a problem with it. I mean, it's part of your, you pay taxes, you know, you want some representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mitch, did you have something to say on this?
Yeah, it's just that there's several countries. I hang out with Belgians, like I said on earlier on the radio show. It's mandatory there, too. And I have friends in Brazil. It's mandatory there. And even if you're out of the country, like I have friends from Brazil here, they go to the consulate.
Wow.
And, didn't know that.
Yeah, and you pay a fine in these places as well. It's a small fine, but still, it encourages people to vote. And many people, they just turn in a blank ballot if they're totally not into it, but most people actually vote.
It's kind of like the census in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, although
might
the census...
Be,
yeah, census has...
Because I'm sure there's some people that don't want the government to necessarily know where they are.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as something can get to you somehow, you have to pay your taxes, you have to be on a jury occasionally, or at least show up. So they need a way of getting, it doesn't have to be your actual home address, but as long as they can get to you and they know that you're a different person than someone else, then that should be sufficient.
Yeah. Well, that was my input for the evening. I'll get off the line and let you take another call.
Okay, well, good hearing from you.
Have a good one, guys.
Take care. Wow, mandatory voting. Kind of like that idea. And, you know, for something like that, you have to make it easy for people to vote. So, you know, it seems like a win-win.
And you have to have the systems in place.
Yeah.
You're not going to fool around with, oh, we got this type or it's not working this way. You know, there's an expectation. You're requiring people to show up. You got to have stuff work.
We can't even get past the Tuesday election day thing, which is all based on farmers, you know, with their crops. And, it's fall, so it takes them this long to leave on a weekend to get to the polling place. So that's why it's on a Tuesday, the first Tuesday in November. It's just so silly. Why can't we have it on a Sunday like the rest of the world? You know, at least we have early voting in many places where people can do things like that. Do you have another call? All right. And good evening. You're
yes,
on Off the Hook.
Yes.
It's Rebel. Doesn't let me even finish a sentence. I'm going to do the greeting, Rebel. All right. Let me do the greeting.
Okay.
Good evening and welcome to Off the Hook Overtime. You are now on the air caller. Please address us in a pleasant tone of voice.
Yes. Even though we're not on the air, we're online. We're on the virtual air.
I air quoted air.
Anyway, by the way, the election day is November 1st this year.
No, it's not.
November 1st.
How dare you lie? It's not November 1st. It's November 8th.
That's missing. Yeah.
Oh, it's November 8th?
Wow,
oh,
misinformation. You're going to get Google to ban us again.
Alphabet is going
to... I mean, come on.
Overtime.
Yeah.
Keep
well,
this up.
Speaking of misinformation,
stolen. It was.
You're talking about the InfoWars thing. I think their ads are pulling out of their advertisers are boycotting.
I wonder what concerned them.
Well, I mean, the teachers at that school in Connecticut, I remember on a news report they said that it was like Pearl Harbor.
It was like Pearl Harbor. In what way?
No, that's what the teachers say that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I've heard awful stuff too. But it's interesting. That's a step in that it took them that long. I mean, for those advertisers in particular, they're not probably ones everybody's familiar with, but that they have stuck with him so long, and then they're finally abandoning his brand, as it were. That is something. It's interesting, though, that it took, this actual action for them to say, okay, this is enough, It's not that big of them.
Hmm. Let's see. What else?
Wow, Rebel, you ran out of things to say quickly this week.
I think we'll make her a good either movie or private film or video or whatever. You know, like when a stranger calls, you know, I think that was a movie in the 70s or 80s.
It was. I think it was in the 50s, but maybe it was the 70s. I don't know.
I think it was the 70s. But I've heard the movie. But this year, we should have a home movie called When a Scammer Calls.
Oh, I like this.
Yeah. I think we should do that.
Okay. Let's do that.
When
then.
A scammer if you want to go to my YouTube page, Richard Conte, and view, you know, I call scammers. I haven't been doing it lately, but, you know, I get a lot of calls. And they come from 800 numbers and, you know, 917 numbers and numbers that are, like, you know, either not existent or whatever. They keep numbers. I guess maybe they like the college, since the college tuition, the college loan forgiveness was announced, I've been getting a lot of, even though we don't have any college loans or grants or anything, I've got to get calls from these places that say, you know, would you like to, you know what, I could three-way you. Maybe we'll...
No, don't do that. There's no call for that. All you have to do is not pick up the damn phone. Just
no,
pick
I
up for people
I mean,
you
I,
know.
I pick up... Well, no, I do, and I just, you know, kind of like, you know, like play with them, saying, she's hello, this is the operator. I have a collect call.
Uh-huh.
See, he's making a study of it. So he, because he has this abundance, he's turning it into something he can refine into an assessment of these types of callers.
Okay,
that's a great idea.
If you're
for
looking for more for your research, just give out your phone number, and I'm sure people can sign you up for all kinds of things.
Wait,
right?
Is that what he wants?
I think he's more into the incidental ones.
Uh huh. Well, we could probably give out his number because I'm sure we had it somewhere.
No, because if you call it, then you know it's just going to go to like this the number you have is not in service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're not fooled by that.
Now,
by the way, When a Stranger Calls, you were right, 1979. And here's the synopsis. During an evening of babysitting, high school student Jill Johnson is terrorized by a caller who keeps asking, have you checked the children lately? And when she calls the police, they inform her that the calls are coming from? Come on, say it.
A payphone?
Oh, for God's sake, Rebel, really?
Inside the house.
Inside the house, thank you. Come on, it's one of the most famous things ever to say. The calls are coming from inside. Well, so there's a lot from this film that I didn't realize. That's where that phrase comes from. The calls are coming from inside the house, and also, have you checked the children lately? Which I never heard before that film came out.
But that's not a stranger, then, if it's coming from inside the house.
Well, it could be a stranger inside your house. I mean, what would you call a person who broke in that you don't know?
I guess an intruder, I guess. I don't know. But
when an intruder calls? But that's a silly title. I mean, come on. The point is you don't know they're in the house, so they're a stranger from the outset, okay? Then
right,
you find out that the stranger is an intruder. Okay, I guess you could rename the film at that point, but who does that? Really, Rebel?
Now,
some of the things you suggest, I just don't know.
I remember back in the 70s that I used to make a prank call to this person, this one woman that, she would keep me on the line, like saying, hey, I was home alone at the time. I was like maybe 10 years old. She said, are your parents away or where did they go? Did your mother go shopping or, you know, trying to make conversation with me? Meanwhile, I'm on the phone with her for like 3 minutes. I hang up. We have two lines.
Uh-huh.
One line, which is where I called from, which is the phone on the desk.
Right.
And then there's another phone in the kitchen that has another line.
Uh-huh.
Total pick a lunch. She called on the kitchen phone, which is a totally separate line. And then she said, this is a police station. Richard is making prank calls. Are you ever going to call Mrs. Klosner again? I remember I got so scared at that. How did she know my name? How did she know the other number?
Because she knew who you were. I don't know how she knew who you were, but it's obvious she knew who you were. She knew your other phone number. She knew your first name. And she knew that you were the person who would do this. I think we all know that.
The genesis of Rebel.
Has this been something that's been hanging over your head since you were 10 years old?
Actually, it has. It has, like, intrigued me, like, how do they, like, 3 minute, Bernie S. would know something like this.
Look,
fiber optic, maybe.
Rebel, if you called me, all right, and I heard your voice, I would know it was you no matter what number you used.
But I didn't know this. person.
But they knew you. Your reputation precedes itself. People know you. All right, even at 10, people knew you. The entire neighborhood. People probably exchanged all kinds of notes on you back then because
the person I found in the phone book, that's how I picked my friend Frank Kolf. The person I picked in the phone book, mm-hmm. who had the same last name as a friend of mine's name, so maybe she called my friend. I don't know.
What year was this?
1978 or 79.
Okay, so that's pre-caller ID. So they didn't have caller ID.
Right.
Well, you know,
it was where you had to stay on the line, like keep the person on the line for at least 3 minutes in order for it to trace or something. I heard something like that.
I'm sure there's more to the story. Greg or Mitch, did either of you have something to add? Somebody was raving their hands.
Were they around in those days?
Well, it's kind of...
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, we were. So I was going to comment on, we've talked on the radio show before about how a lot of people don't want to respond to email or use email, about how a lot of people now don't pick up the phone, and we're hearing about why. It's like you don't know who's there, and the chances are pretty good that it's just crap. And so you end up with platforms like Facebook offering Messenger where you're only getting messages from people that are on your contact list, if that's, mm-hmm. if that's your settings. And it's easy to understand, you know, that as someone that considering that if I were younger and someone was saying, okay, we have all these ways to communicate, we have email and cell phone. And I'm like, well, that's just a bunch of crap that's coming my way that I don't want to even pick up the phone. First is in 1978 when his phone rings. Of course, you're going to pick it up because mm-hmm. you know it could be someone you want to talk to, and that's the only way you talk to them. So I do understand. I think some of that rationale. By the way, I'm living now with 26-year-old woman in the house. We have someone that's staying with us to help out with the dogs, and her method of communication is Facebook Messenger. And when it's time to communicate about shall we get together and take care of the dogs or something, my wife is sending her a Facebook message from the first floor to the lower floor where the apartment is, and that's the preferred communication as opposed to even wandering downstairs.
What happened to bellowing down the stairs? People don't do that anymore?
Well, that's what I would. I would just bump on the floor, you know, and say, come on up.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Or get a cordless phone so that you can answer the phone on, you know, if you're upstairs.
Or get a Radio Shack intercom.
Radio Shack intercom? I don't remember those. Radio Shack? Oh,
yeah.
That was with the cordless
Absolutely.
Phone.
Radio Shack intercoms. They were the best.
Well, that's the difference between phones and email. And emails you could, like, ignore and delete. Phone calls just ring and, you know, get a... either pick it up or not pick it up.
Or you could set up a pirate shortwave station and then have a shortwave radio downstairs so that you can transmit and the person can tune in and hear you. Actually, I don't know. Why does it have to be shortwave? I guess it could be FM. It doesn't have to be shortwave. But then anyone in the world could hear you as well. Go ahead, Mitch. You had something?
I remember.
Is your name Mitch? I don't think your name is Mitch. Oh. Well, Mitch speak. Go ahead, Mitch.
I just had something silly to say with a Radio Shack intercom, which, of course, I had when I was a little kid. And I had shared a bunk bed with my brother. And I set up an intercom between the top bunk and the bottom bunk.
That's perfect.
That's cool. But you're right there in the same bunk bed. You really needed an intercom?
Well, we were both geeks, you know.
Well, this proves it for sure. Wow. That's amazing.
The important thing is find a way that works. And it's so funny, like the idea that a phone call or a message on a system that is public, ostensibly, is suspicious. That's a new phenomena that really, unless it's a text that you understand or unless it's a call you're anticipating because you scheduled it and arranged it in advance over some other form of communication, it's a very odd way that something that was exceedingly – that allowed you to be exceedingly accessible on, like, the public telephone network, it changes and transforms just in the basis of people suspecting that – more often than not, people using that mode are really just solicitors, and it's sad in a way. I liken it to what I was talking about with speech and certain platforms allowing certain things and others not, and then those splintering off, whereas you'd sign up for a platform and everybody would be on there, so you're accessible to people that you don't necessarily talk to or agree with. And now, of course, as they fragment and splinter in the same way that, you know, maybe it's not a suspicious call, but it's a political confrontation that you don't want to be exposed to on this more or less, private community. We're experiencing similar things repeating, I guess, is the short version of what I'm noticing. And it's odd that what people end up using is sort of endlessly hybrid forms of all of it and sort of unifying it in their own ways.
Rebel, we're going to allow you one more comment, then we're going to move on.
I remember when I was back maybe 1980 or maybe 81 or something like that, the payphone in the shopping center where I usually, you know, go, right, which is right near me where I lived, would ring. It rang, and I answered it, and the person said, hello, you have won a prize. And, you know, they claimed it from a radio station, and you've won a prize, and, oh, what's your address to send you a prize? And I was stupid enough to give my address, but nothing ever showed up or nothing, you know, maybe it was a scam of some sort.
What kind of scam was that? You gave them your address, and nothing happened?
I don't believe anything happened, no.
And those are the days you could call a payphone. You can't do that anymore.
It's just so weird that these technology evolutions become known for how they were abused more than the positive attributes of them. And as we moved from, like, Web 2.0 or whatever these platforms are to even more intensely advanced systems, what kinds of abuse will they be characterized or known for? We haven't even thought of it yet, and we're still trying to figure out the consequences of what technologies we've embraced and now are turning away from in many respects.
Well,
it's fascinating.
Always count on abuse being number one.
It's weird. It's like everything we look back on, it's like, how is that just completely upended from its original intent and not taken seriously.
Rebel, good to hear from you as always. We look forward to next time.
Okay.
Take care. And that was Rebel. Mitch, I know it's very late where you are. What time is it?
3:11 in the morning.
Oh, it's pretty late. And Greg, where you are, what time is it?
It's only 6:11 and p.m. and the dogs are being fed, and you might have heard our dog Maud barking in the background. She's still hungry.
How is Maud?
She's doing remarkably well. Her brother, Wayne, unfortunately, went over the Rainbow Bridge about 2 or 3 months ago. So he had some deterioration that was fairly rapid. But Maud is getting on by. She's, I think, 14 or so years old now.
She's 14?
And pretty healthy, good appetite. Has some.
Did you say
14? Had some liver problems, so we have her on some meds.
Uh-huh. Maud's my favorite of all your dogs. So somehow I don't think of Maud as a dog. it's like she's a step above, and she kind of handles things. It's really cool. I also heard through the grapevine that you lost Bear.
Yeah. So we've actually had a few more dogs come into the house since we had our big get together a few years ago now, but Bear is one of the ones that actually turned out he was born in New York. We didn't know that until a little bit later on, and had a couple other places. I don't think New York City, but New York State, and lived a couple other places, and we adopted it in Alaska, and then moved him from Alaska to Ontario and then to Yukon. But he was pretty old. It was time for old Bear. He was about 16, and that's for a pretty big breed like a husky, that's about as old as they generally get to be. Sometimes only 13 or 14, or typically 15 or 16.
By the way, as long as it keeps coming up, you mentioned Alaska, I gotta recommend a new TV program that's on ABC called Alaska Daily. You would like it, Greg. It's about a reporter who moves to Alaska to work on a newspaper. It's a lot of subject material about missing and murdered indigenous women, which is a big problem in that particular part of the world, and it's really covering ground that you don't expect on network TV. So check that out. I said it to all the listeners on Thursdays, I believe.
documentary or
no, it's a 1 hour fictional piece,
primetime show, and it's pretty good, scripted and dramatic and
filmed in Alaska.
For that,
wow, that's really cool
type of show. It's pretty outstanding where they've taken it, mm-hmm. and they're treating the subject matter with the kind of reverence I think it deserves.
A lot of good characters, a lot of interesting people.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Alaska Daily. Okay, so let's one more call.
Yeah, I'm ready.
802-321-4225. We will wait for one more call. If we don't get one more call, of course, we will simply go our merry way without a call.
Extra points for calls that talk about ways to use technology to help get the vote out.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, do you have a favorite voting app you're using? Do you spread the word on different ideas for getting people signed and registered?
Thanks, Teacher Kyle, for making homework.
Did you have an experience voting? Please rate your voting experience.
I thought we were going to get away without an assignment.
This was the voting show.
Yeah, it certainly was. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. And, of course, if you've already called, it doesn't count if you call back. So I feel I have to say that. And, of course, you can write to us at Off the Hook, OTH at 2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. We do get letters from people, and sometimes we read them on the air. Go ahead, Greg.
Voting is an area where there's such an opportunity for technical solutions, for teleconferencing-based solutions and for anti-fraud measures to be put in place. And we've seen that some of the solutions are out there, and it's just amazing. And they're applied, but unevenly, because it's just amazing how little will there seems to be by the politicians and bureaucrats that make the rules to put some of these solutions in place. And I wish so ends up being, if that's what's interesting about it, is voting security, voting access, voting equity, all these types of things are solutions ready, and yet the will is not there. The technology is there, but the will is not there, which is kind of the opposite. A lot of times we're waiting for the technology, but in this case there's so many great choices.
Absolutely. And document, you know, if something is going on at a polling place, it looks funny, take a picture. You know, you have all this technology at your fingertips. Make sure you bring your phone, you know, and maybe look up ways to report stuff that you might think, you know, is definitely intimidation. And we want to make sure people are safe and out there participating in the process. So if you're not using mail or some other technology and stuff, document what you see and share. Maybe we can make this stuff better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but careful, though. I mean, we don't want confrontations.
Well,
if somebody is being intimidating towards voters, you definitely want to note that.
As simple a thing as a picture, whatever. I'm just saying that there's existing technologies that we shouldn't forget about that could really help in these situations.
Absolutely. We did not get a call?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, I'll give it one more minute, and then after that 1 minute, we're going to say goodnight. Mitch, go ahead.
So we were talking about different kind of platforms for people to communicate. This has been going on for a long, long time. There's always been people who communicate preferably on one rather than another, people who will only use IRC if they're geeky, people who will not use IRC because they hate it, and they'll only use email or whatever. And now there's how many, you know, hundreds of different platforms, and some of them more obscure than others. There are people who only communicate on Facebook, and I have some of them, so I check my Facebook once a day. And I was super busy today, so I was actually checking that before I got on with all of you on Skype for Off the Hook Radio. And I happened to have Facebook still open on my computer here, and it dinged just as Greg was talking. And we were talking about scams earlier. Ariane, this is from someone who I don't know and I'm not friends with, in quotes. Ariane, my girlfriend, says she needs $300 and is in the middle of nowhere, 20 hours from her hotel, and was robbed, and it's scary. She has no recollection.
Ariane, how can we help?
Send $300 and we will repay you.
Okay, do they take credit cards? Because, you know, I want to send cash to the mail. That's stupid. I don't want to be scammed.
Yeah, don't be stupid.
No. So, yeah, I'll give my credit card number if you give me a phone number to help Ariane. That sucks. She should be more careful.
Yeah, this is from perhaps this is a real person and their account was scammed. But, there's some interesting scams on Facebook lately. Over the last year, I haven't seen this before this year, but people will take someone's account, they'll copy their whatever they call their main picture, their Facebook picture, mm-hmm. and then they'll contact all of their friends through Facebook Messenger saying you should first of all, they'll give you a friend request, and then they'll say, oh yeah, my account was hacked, and then they'll say that they got a huge amount of money from a government agency and that you should contact this particular person on Facebook, because uh-huh. of course government agencies all use Facebook give away money.
If they're smart, yeah.
So that's happened to me several times.
Hang on a second. All right, so wait. So if I take the face of somebody that's on Facebook now, then I say that's me, and I lost my account, and if the person is continuing to say stuff, they're lying and they're a scam artist. But then I introduce this government agency that has all this money, so what do I do?
So like you, Emmanuel, have a Facebook account, say,
right.
and you've been on for, you know, years and years, uh-huh. and you have your Facebook profile photo.
Right.
And so I come along and I go, well, Emmanuel has a lot of Facebook friends, so I'll take his account, I'll create a new one with your name, uh-huh. and then add and do Facebook friend requests.
I thought I was the scammer here. Now suddenly you're the scammer. Okay,
no,
fine.
I'm a scammer.
You take the scam.
You know,
I want a taste though.
You're a good guy and I'm a bad guy. So I created an account that looks exactly like yours, except there's no content because it's new. And I get all of your friends to believe that your account was hacked and they should make me a friend and I am impersonating you. Mm-hmm. And now I say, yeah, you know, what's new with you? Oh, but for me, what's new with me is I got $100,000 from the government agency of blah, blah, blah. And you should too. You'd be checked into it. You should check it out.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, this is just a common scam going on now.
And then when they check into it, what happens? They just get their info?
When someone tries to scam me, I try to scam them back.
Right.
So I go on there and I'm like, tell me about this. And so they give me the link to their Facebook friend who is this government agent who's going to give me $100,000 if mm-hmm. I'm eligible.
Mm-hmm.
And then I report it to Facebook. And then about an hour later, they're all gone.
You spoil all the fun, Mitch. Party
I know, I'm really no fun, because I am a bad guy, you know.
We have a call. Our last call is here. Good evening. Welcome to Off the Hook Overtime.
Greetings, everybody.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm phoning from London. It's Zap.
Zap, how you doing?
Hey, not bad.
It's pretty late over there, too.
Yeah, it's about 2:25 in the morning.
Uh-huh. So what's new over in the UK? Well, I know what's new.
Uh-huh.
We have yet another prime minister, my God, going through them like baseball.
Yeah,
cards.
We didn't vote. That's the reason why I'm phoning. Basically, we've had about 3 prime ministers in the last 2.5 months or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, not even voting, and we're getting new people.
Yeah, that's taken care of for you by the party. That must be comforting.
And you got a king.
Yeah.
You got a new king.
Yeah, it's been rough. We haven't talked to you.
Since. I love how you guys went from the oldest or the longest reigning monarch to the shortest reigning prime minister within a month. That was incredible.
Yeah, very short time. But I think Canada has the same monarchy, so they've got it as well.
That's true, Greg. You're under the king's realm, I believe.
We are, yeah. In fact, in my workplace, we have something called the Queen's Printer, which is who does the printing, and that's been renamed the King's Printer. So things have to change. But I wanted to comment about this parliamentary system, because we heard from the earlier caller from Canada about how some of the Fords didn't manage to, deplace in the Ontario or the Toronto elections. And the thing that's weird
and we just heard two examples from England, same system, is in the parliamentary system, you vote for your local person, your local member of parliament who goes to the federal system, or your local member of the legislative assembly who goes to the provincial or territorial system. So very similar to like a state representative and a federal representative, House or Senate. And then those people are the ones who decide who's the leader of the party. And that person becomes the premier of Ontario in the case of Doug Ford, or the prime minister of Canada in the case of Justin Trudeau, or the prime minister of, you know, England in the case of this, this other rich guy, that got elected.
Yeah,
so it's really fascinating to me that we don't have direct, ability to even vote for the people that are going to be your, you know, in equivalent to the governor or the equivalent to the president.
We're letting Zap reply.
It's thinking. In.
Yeah, hi.
Okay, just making sure. You heard
that,
right?
I was listening.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's similar here in Germany.
Is it similar in Germany?
Just about.
Wow, okay. Cool. Anything else happening over there in London?
Yeah, how are you holding up?
Not really. I'm sort of holding up best I can, considering my circumstances. But the main reason I'm phoning is I saw you sent out a message on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Asking for everyone to try and subscribe via Amazon.
Well, okay, there was something sent out by 2600 encouraging people who have Kindles to subscribe to the magazine because it's super cheap. It's a monthly thing. It's under a dollar, and it helps the magazine because what we've been faced with in recent months and pretty much throughout the years is just skyrocketing printing costs, and especially after the pandemic or through the pandemic, they just keep going up relentlessly, and there's really no escape from that. It's not something that you can weigh something else to counteract it and solve the problem. So we think that a strong digital reaction, whether it's through our PDFs, which is still trying to get a subscription model going with the PDFs, or with Kindle editions. That would help offset the massive printing costs. Because keep in mind, you know, we just had a conference. We had about half number of people that we wanted to have at the conference because of COVID. We kept that down. So we have some lean times ahead, it looks like, at this point, unless we figure out some alternatives. We want to be able to keep doing all the things that we love doing. But these things affect us. They affect everybody, but especially, you know, a printed magazine, those are few and far between. A printed magazine with no advertisements, you know, people will tell you it's impossible. And I don't want to agree with them. I don't want to start saying, yeah, they were right. I think we can get through this, but it just means we have to ask for support. And we never want to just ask for support without giving something back. So I just feel, you know, as many ways as you can figure out to support 2600, that'll keep us going.
I totally agree. I think it's worth every cent or every penny. Unfortunately, you're going to have to wait 28 days to get my money because I'm in a trial period. Is there any other way that I can get you more money by getting maybe buying some PDFs of a website, for example?
Well, we're going to be, we're looking into this. It's just it's been difficult finding the right solution for PDF subscriptions where you can actually get the PDF version delivered to you automatically. We hope to find that and have that solved. We're also going back and making PDFs available of individual issues. We go back to 2019 now, I think. So we're going to try opening that up as well. So there's a few things that we're going to be doing.
Yeah, I just want to add to this that we are looking intensely at specifically custom subscription management software. It is a really kind of simple thing in function, but it is a really oversaturated market. There's all of these different software as a service companies trying to get in on this need that people have, whatever they're selling, whether it's a subscription for physical goods or in our case, digital items and publications and so forth. So we're really looking intensely at pretty much everything that's out there, and a big part of, there's a wide range of options, as I said, a big part of it is cost and scale. And we want to make it custom so that it does what we want it to do. We want it to deliver the way we want it to do. We want it to manage our subscribers in a very, let's just say, controlled way. we care very much about who and how that's being handled. And suffice to say, we're not going to be developing something custom ourselves. We'd like to work with someone that is able to do basically what we want without all the extra stuff and without basically robbing us, because a lot of them are set up to basically you just hand over all this stuff, all this control, and they charge you a lot just to get in onboarded, as they like to use in the language, and then they gouge you. That's not fair, but it's also impractical for us to learn how to build widgets and develop this ourselves, because we're doing a lot in the way of publishing the actual magazine. And this is a common problem with publishers making the leap from physical to digital. And we like, as E said, we like to keep printing.
Yeah.
So if we can straddle that in some way, we look at a lot of the different things that other publications do, and in terms of layout and engineering and stuff like that. But this subscription management thing is something we are really keenly interested in. So if anyone has suggestions on how to customize, how to do this affordably, how to scale it affordably, we would love to get insight on ways that don't feel like you're dropped off, abandoned in a wilderness, because that's a lot of where we're at now.
Everything and everybody is basically telling us printing doesn't make sense, doesn't work. You know, it's expensive to print, it's expensive to mail, the stores are going out of business, people don't go outside anymore. And there's just something so special to me about something that you hold in your hand that is printed, ink on paper. And that's how we got started. That was, the romance that lured us in. And that's not something I just, want to give up on. I think there is plenty of future there. But there's also future in other things as well that can help offset the investment we have to make to keep the print going. So hopefully we can figure this out as a community. The community has always been super supportive. So I'm just hoping that we find a way.
Yeah, getting better.
The community is very supportive. It is very supportive. I've been spreading the word. I got a subscription. I don't even use Kindle. I know you can get an app, but I prefer the paper version. Mm-hmm. So I do agree that your magazine in your hand physically is great, especially if you want to swat a fly. It's a lot cheaper than hitting your tablet.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a format that doesn't use batteries. It's shareable in many ways. You can bring it with you, we're going to continue to do as much as we can to keep it in that form and use as many of the different options there are, because this is not a unique problem necessarily, but we want to also enhance that ability to use the formats that people are also using, like tablets and so forth, to just keep up with it and keep refreshing it with stuff that's accessible. Like, that's really what it's about, is it accessible? Is it convenient for people? And those other management features that integrate with our store and stuff, like, that is that's where it's at for us. We want to make sure that is top-notch and as good as it can be, retaining people and just keeping it as good as it can be. And it's lagged behind. We've not given it as much attention. We're definitely working on that right now.
And, Zap, we want to thank you for your support. You've always been there for us. You've always been this voice of comfort in hard times and sanity as well. So don't think that's not noticed.
Well, like you said the last time I phoned, 2600 is like my family.
Mm-hmm.
We're very close at the London meets. We're branching out. We're trying to get more meetings. We'll have more meetings in the UK in 2023 with any luck. We're working on the Italian one to get Rome up and going. But that person's had a few problems. So we're not going to put any pressure on them. So, you know, the love gets shared around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's my life. It's all been a big place in my life. I've met some very, very good friends through 2600 meets. And
likewise.
I just love the community, really.
Yeah.
It's just my life.
It's so unique, so awesome.
I was thinking about Rebel.
Okay.
It does feel like the 90s again when he phoned in. And I was wondering, do you want us to send the boys around like we did last time? Maybe sort of take care of it. Because I do believe if you go through the archives, the radio show after Beyond Hope, it was the last time we dealt with the rebel situation.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't know if you listened in years past where we were going through old voicemail recordings or voice BBS recordings from back then. There are tons of. Do you remember we had a voice BBS? In 1996, 97. Well, the messages for that board still exist, except they're in a format that we could not translate. And thanks to some listeners,
it took us a while.
We were able to do just that. But now we're in the process of going through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages and weeding out the ones that are obviously private messages or ones that are unsuitable for one reason or another. And Rebel is on a lot of those. He's on a lot of those, talking about Beyond Hope. You're probably on a couple, and we're going to hear them at some point. So it's just that universe is still out there, and it was very unique, a very special time. And, yes, send the boys around. I imagine they've probably gained quite a bit of weight by over the years, but they're still an intimidating
force. So you know, though, but Rebel's been... He's been shooting hoops and stuff. He's got boys, too.
He's been working out, you might be surprised.
Yeah. They have his
It'd
back.
It'd be nice
stuff,
to see Rebel again. I haven't seen him since '97, actually.
Well, you know,
he's been a great,
good memories.
Yeah, he's traveling around the world now. He went to Russia, of all things.
I think he came via London, but he didn't tell me he was passing through.
The nerve, right? He should have.
Yeah.
Well, we'll certainly tell you when we're in.
Yeah, I'm still trying to track down some of the people from Beyond Hope, actually, because he's got the Tiny T-Shell. NetWeasel, especially, I'm trying to track down. I've had no word of NetWeasel. What happened to NetWeasel?
I don't know what happened to a lot of people. It's kind of weird to think you know, listening to these things, you hear a voice and it triggers a memory, and you say, what happened? Where did that person go? What became of them? And there's oftentimes no trace at all because all you knew was a handle. And, you know, if it's someone like NetWeasel, okay, what does that translate to? How are you going to find somebody with that name? So, yeah.
Oh, I've got his real name, but I'm not going to give it out.
Okay, obviously. Well, then you're ahead of
no
me.
Doxing. Yeah.
All right.
But, yeah, no, I miss all those guys. We had a good time. It was the first time I went to New York and a Hope.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that very distinctly. It was an event. It was an amazing event.
Keep the stories alive. Yeah. You know, share what you can remember and try to get in touch like you're mentioning, because that's how you keep what it was and keep it, pass it along, that memory, and people will get the spirit from those stories, I think.
And of course, anyone has recordings or pictures, please share those as well, because that way we document that.
Yeah, and I just want to add, just that voicemail thing, like, we mentioned it once on the air, nobody said anything, and this is after I found, like, a power supply from a Mac that, like, eventually got this old, like, 386 go or 286.
Windows 3.1,
it's
right?
286, I think.
But it's Windows 3.1 we have to run.
I think it's even earlier, yes. Right. Anyway, that booted up. We copied the files. I don't know how we got them off the hard drive. Somehow with like an IDE converter or something.
It was a challenge.
Made an appeal. Nobody said anything. Then we mentioned it again a couple years later on the radio, and somebody actually responded and told us what was going on with it, played around with it a little bit, and then we did a bunch of batches and are going through them.
So many messages. Oh, my God.
Just keep going is the theme there, I guess. Just relentlessly and get those stories. Make sure that they don't just disappear on that hard drive or whatever it is you're doing, you know, share, and other people will react, and that stuff's priceless.
And share it with Jason over at Internet Archive. And
if you don't do anything else.
It'll be preserved forever.
Yep. I've got a load of photos I need to scan, maybe send some to you. There's some video.
Wow.
I'm still trying to track down the video of you, Emmanuel, abseiling outside the pub.
I have that somewhere on one of my computers. There was a video of me. It was weird because I had to make a flight to Paris, I think, early in the morning. You guys were having a party in a pub, and the only way that we could have the pub was for the door to be locked at a certain time. And so I couldn't go downstairs and leave when my taxi was arriving. The only way for me to leave the second floor was out the window, and that, of course, presented a problem of how to do that safely. And somehow... You guys over in the UK were prepared for this.
They managed that.
Oh, my. And it was scary. It was, and if you look at me, I'm like, basically, my head is pointed directly down at the ground. I'm upside down. I'm just going very slowly down until I actually was on the ground, and that was it. That was how I left London.
Yeah, I'm thinking that was 1996.
Possibly, yeah. I was in England then, so.
No, definitely. I've got a very good memory. Uh-huh. That's the problem. I have a very good memory. If I get arrested and they ask me about the hacking scene in the UK, a lot of people will get busted.
Well, don't tempt them. They're going to be looking for you.
It's okay. I just say I'm crazy and I should get away with that.
Okay.
I'll be the insanity.
You could probably get away with that, yes. Well, Zab,
I think I could.
Zab, it's so great to hear from you. And please stay in touch. And we look forward to seeing you again.
Will do. All right. Phone in when I want to phone in.
All right, cool.
All right, take care, everyone.
Be well.
Good to hear you.
Bye.
All right, folks. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. I think we said enough.
That election was stolen.
Oh, shut up.
It was.
Shut up. Get out of here.
So sarcastic.
I'm sick of
it. Just wanted to remind you.
Yeah.
You've warmed up the transcription engine. The AI is awake at the point. You want to make sure we send a few more messages.
Do you think YouTube's going to kick us off again?
Maybe. We should bet on this. I would think yes.
Folks, if you're listening, you better grab the show now. Well, actually, we always keep a copy on our site anyway, which is why you run your own site so that this kind of crap can't happen.
Or whoever's in charge of appeals, go ahead and keep the light on for us.
Yeah.
We'll be there as soon as it's taken down.
But, yeah, whatever. I don't suffer this gladly at all. I just don't.
One more time for the road.
You want me to play it again? Fine, the whole thing. That election was stolen. It was. And let me tell you why. I'll tell you that as soon as I tell you why all vaccinations are bad. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You know, we can joke, right? We can, right? Well, we'll find out, I guess.
I guess we will.
Yeah. Well, guys, it was so much fun having you this week. It really was. Change of pace.
It's been a treat. Thank you.
Yeah, and spanning the globe the way you guys are. It's just you're both testament to the joy of travel and innovation, and it's just so much fun every time we're together.
Indeed, and this is the first time we're together since July in New York.
Yeah, remember that Chinese place we found at 2 a.m. in Flushing?
Oh, so much fun!
So much fun.
We were exhausted, and it just all your help throughout, and we're just happy to share that experience and everything to come with y'all and everybody listening. But that just was it, that we made it and had a successful event.
It was a Sunday, too, a Sunday night at 2 a.m.
We found the cool
That's
part,
how you
yeah.
know you're in New York City. At 2 a.m. you can find great, authentic Chinese food in Queens. And the place had Hope in the name. What was it called? Hope to See You?
Hope to See You. That was the name of the place.
What was it called?
Exactly.
Hope to See You, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's great. So that was a totally fitting way to end a totally crazy experience.
No, the totally fitting way was the next morning driving in a 2600 van in a severe thunderstorm. That was the actual way to leave.
Well, me and Greg missed that particular.
Actually, no, I was driving the Ryder truck, wasn't I, or the rental truck?
I was behind you, yeah.
You were in the 2600 van.
I was.
And this is a true story. I was at an intersection in Queens. It's pouring down rain. And this stupid truck, which I was having an argument from the very beginning, had no air conditioning. It was awful. I couldn't figure out how to turn the windshield wiper on because every vehicle has it in a different place. And this one, it wasn't a switch. It was a dial. But I couldn't find it. So at the light, I'm yelling to Kyle, you have to come up here and help me. In the middle of traffic, he runs up and shows me how to turn the windshield wiper on, and that's how we got back. Yeah.
Yes, I'm very intuitive and kinesthetic.
For all the smoothness you ever experience at a Hope Conference, there are many scenes like that happen, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah. But we figured out together, so until next time, let's stay in touch.
Yes. Listeners, we hope to see you again soon.
Indeed. Thank you.
And thank you, guys. Mitch, Greg.
Yeah, thanks.
Be well.
Hey.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Appreciate all the calls, too.